Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com. Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com. Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. On today's program, we present part two, the concluding part, of National Alliance Chairman William White Williams' recent interview on the David Duke program on the Rents Radio Network. Dr. Duke, whose website is davidduke.com, and Chairman Williams continue their discussion of American politics and what white people can do to secure their interests in an increasingly hostile, increasingly alien, increasingly tyrannical America. This program has been edited for broadcast. When we left off last week, Chairman Williams had just made the point that we separatists cannot possibly be supremacists who want to rule over other races. Listen.
Well, first of all, you know, we don't have any supremacy in this country. The supremacy is owned by the Jews, really, in terms of the banking powers. The 18 of the 20 biggest contributors to Hillary Clinton are Jews. The biggest single contributor to Donald Trump is a Jew. Of course, that's an insurance policy for the Jews, because the Jews themselves in their own publications say that Trump has been more dangerous, more threatening the security of Jews than any other candidate in American history. I can show you that. We know that they control the media, and we know the media is 98% against Trump. And in fact, even things like Fox News is a divided situation. And the rest of the media is just total, but there's a lot of anti-Trump stuff on Fox News. But I want to give you now, again, we're going to go back to the Barrett issue, the Supreme Court justice hearing. And I'm going to just try to use your imagination and the imagination of the audience, if there was an entirely different, and it would have been a very unacceptable questioning of Barrett. So let me just create that. This didn't happen, folks, but imagine if this happened, okay? ABC Evening News announcer, perhaps the most emotional moment of the day was when Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois asked Barrett, the mother of five white children, about the racial anguish that's erupted in this country this year, right? So Durbin then says, imagine if he would ask her this. If he'd have said, Mrs. Barrett, have you seen or learned about the horrific story of Cannon Hinnant? Cannon Hinnant was an innocent five-year-old white little boy who was shot in the head by a black man execution style. And Barrett answers, I have. So then Durbin says, what impact did that have on you? And Barrett says, Senator, as you might imagine, given that I have five white children, so that was very, very personal for my white family. I was there, and my 17-year-old white daughter, Vivian, you know, who was adopted from Russia, was very concerned as all this was erupting. It was very difficult for her. We wept together in my room for the poor little white child whose angel-like face and head was blown apart by a violent black man. My children to this point in their lives had the benefit of growing up in a very safe and civilized white neighborhood where they have not yet experienced hatred or violence. And for Vivian to understand that there could be a risk for her and her white brother, or the son, the white son she might have, that they could one day likely face that kind of horrific brutality. That has been an ongoing conversation for us, like it has for Americans all over the country, especially, of course, for white people who are more than 50 times likely to be robbed, raped, assaulted, or murdered by a black person, and a black person is likely to be brutalized by a white person. Now that, right, that is all true, and these are all facts, but you couldn't even imagine that kind of questioning and that kind of answer, could you?
No, I remember that murder of little Kennan. It was in Wilson, North Carolina, and it was covered up by the media for several days before they finally couldn't cover it up anymore. But
there were no demonstrations for this little boy. And folks, if you don't think this is that they're going to say, so what? Is that racial or what? Think about it for a second, folks. If that would have been a black, little five-year-old black kid on a tricycle, shot execution style by the white next door neighbor riding his back bike on the white lawn or next to him or something irritated. Do you think that they wouldn't have said this was a racial crime? And that would have even eclipsed George Floyd, that criminal who they made into a saint.
That 25-year-old black murderer had a long record of drug convictions, and he what's the bad part was he had dinner with the little five-year-old's dad the night before. I mean, that says something. It might have been a drug deal gone bad, who knows, but they didn't go there.
Or it might have been just, you know, typical white people thinking that, you know, they're going to lessen the danger to their son by being nice to the next door neighbor while this guy is being incited to violence by the national media. I mean, it's frightening to think about what's going on here. One more thing, too. You know, when I first talked about her, you know, legitimate answer, what she actually answered, again, there's so many stupid things. Again, I mean, for instance, imagine her saying in this thing that, my black child's had the benefit of growing up in a cocoon where they've experienced.
A colored person?
Yes, right. Where they've not yet experienced hatred or violence. Yeah, where they've experienced that hatred and violence from. And for Vivian, her daughter, their black daughter, to understand that there would be risk to her brother and son that she might have one day. Then the ironic thing about that is the only reason that she's able to go to these countries and adopt these blacks and virtue signal to the world about how wonderful she is, right, is because of the hatred and the violence and the absolute lack of civilization and just, you know, the horrible lifestyle they live there in an all-black country of Haiti, right? I mean, so we have a situation in this country where we can't talk about truth. And the reason that little white child was shot, if there wouldn't have been forced integration of our neighborhoods and our areas, if we'd allowed to be like we once were in the South and around the country even, where blacks had their districts where they lived and whites had their districts, that little boy, Cannon Hinnant, you know, wouldn't have had a black neighbor, you know, who blew his brains out execution style. I mean, and do I believe that, you know, if, you know, what was the reason for this? I mean, I truly believe that race was part of it. And we also saw, and I've talked about this on my show a number of times. We had a veteran of the Second World War whose son was buried in the military cemetery. And I think it was Maryland. And he and his wife of like 60 years, they were like in their 80s, would go put flowers on his grave every day. And a black man killed him, and he admitted it. He killed him for retaliation against the shooting of the, quote, jogger, whatever, in Georgia. He just found two people. An 86-year-old man, an 87-year-old woman, you know, going to put flowers in the grave, but there's some shot down because they were white people. And yet there's not one in 100,000 white people in this country that could could tell you their names or know anything about this horrific. You'd think that'd be a human rights story, too. I mean, mm-hmm. an old couple going to their son who's buried in a military cemetery to put flowers that they do every day, murdered by a black man because of the racial hatred engendered by the mass media against white mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, I was listening to Barrett's answer with one ear yesterday. She started, you know, she's very bright and attractive and conversant in the law. She was number one in her class at Notre Dame, and, you know, she's smart. But she started talking about separability. I said, oh, here it comes. She's a separatist. But no, it was just some arcane legal maxim or something. But she has these two Haitian adoptees, and I'm just curious if she teaches them about Haitian history and how that former French colony, the blacks, murdered every single white on the island. When was it? You know the history, 1803 or something
Haiti.
Like that.
In Haiti. Yeah. It was the island of San Domingo. And it was Haiti. And they murdered 40,000, mm-hmm. all the whites, man, woman, and baby and child.
Murdered. And then they went after the coloreds because they were mixed.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, America has been pouring money, equivalent to trillions of dollars over the last 150 years, into Haiti. They built them a railway over the entire country. Dr. Pierce, obviously, your patron saint of your organization, wrote about that and talked about it. And they did everything. They took white taxpayers' money. And that's the ironic thing is since the 1960s, under Lyndon Johnson, started the war, quote, war on poverty. And it was supposed to end the poverty of black people and help strengthen the black family and lessen crime. And it's going to bring peace, love, and brotherhood. And since that time, minimum, just from the direct payments, not even counting the law enforcement, the imprisonment, which costs more than, you know, sending a person to a good college today to keep them in prison, mm-hmm. right? But even that, I mean, you're talking about $22 trillion. And of that $22 trillion, one could argue proportionally per capita, it was 99% white people's money. White people got less money. You know, their disposable income was less because their taxes were paying for this crap, right?
What do you think about Donald Trump's platinum plan to get more black support, where he's $500 billion?
I don't know if it's just a teaser trying to get more black votes. I couldn't see them following through $500 billion. That is it's another typical program of discrimination, racial discrimination against young people, often working people, are starting their own plumbing business. They're working for a plumber and they start their own plumbing business, or they start their own restaurant. They start their own whatever, right?
At some point, the white taxpayer is going to say enough and withdraw his consent to be taxed and pay for this crazy
And they're going to be discriminated against. You know, Yelp, the search engine that a lot of people use to find good restaurants and hotels and everything, they are now, listen to this, they're now allowing people who are minorities to put black-owned on their ads. Now, they would never allow white-owned because, you know, white people don't have any right to know if whites own the business, but black-owned, so it's direct discrimination. It's trying to get people, white people who are brainwashed by the media that
it helps whites to say, okay, well, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to patronize them. They're black owned.
Yeah, but that's the purpose of it. It's the other way around. And also, the only reason that they would even allow doing that is because they know that the lie about white people being so racist is a lie, right? That there's so many whites, and unfortunately, that would do that just because of the propaganda they're giving them. Oh, we've got to go. Forget about that poor white person who's starting that restaurant and is barely able to make ends meet. No, we're just going to, you know. So the whole thing is insane. And not only is it they're doing this, they're also now allowing, listen to this. This is unbelievable. This is like doxing multiplied by the millions every day, right? They're going to let people report racism by the business of any business, any restaurant, any bar. They're going to report the racism, and all somebody's got to do is just write, right? There's no justice here. You're not going to have a court case where they have witnesses. You're not going to have any way to prove it or disprove it, right? But obviously, you know, I mean, this is going to be on Yelp. But the United States Justice Department is not going to go in there and file a criminal complaint against Yelp for discrimination, right? I mean, you can't do that if you were white. I mean, the whole thing's amazing. So affirmative action in California, we have Proposition 206. Now, back in 1995, this is after – in fact, this was right before I won office to serve as the chairman of a large Republican district in Louisiana. But they invited me to California to debate debate on the issue of Proposition 206, which was proposed by a mixed race, part black, part Asian guy. And the bill basically said that no government entity, no university, no county, no we have parishes here in Louisiana, as you know, no area, no aspect of the state, no university, no school, no any sort of publicly funded thing can discriminate against a person of higher qualifications, that race could not be used, you know, as a way to discriminate against people getting into a university or getting a job training program or being hired by a police department or a fire department or anything like that.
What was the result of that referendum?
55%. This just shows you how the propaganda has an impact after many, many years. 55% of Californians voted for that referendum, right? 55%. And I'll tell you, this is another story that deals with, you know, get a bit of my history, which I think our people are interested in a little bit on my show. But they actually invited me to the University of California with the chief opponent of that bill, a guy named Joe Hicks, recently died. They've given him these lauded obituaries now in the last year or so, the great Joe Hicks. Mm-hmm. And they invited me there, and they had a lot of riots, you know, with the left and everything. And so I go there. It was the most covered debate on affirmative action in California's, in America's history. And it was interesting, and it was very publicized. It was on most of the public stations at that point because they thought Joe Hicks was going to whip my ass. And I go on there, and so after that debate, it went on to win 55% of the vote in California. So and interestingly enough, the cuck Republicans, because I was still a Republican. In fact, I was getting ready to run for the House, and also I ran for the chairmanship of the Republican Party in the largest Republican district in Louisiana. And these cuck Republicans were saying, oh, they're just going, you know, they're inviting David Duke because they want to defeat this legislation. Well, it didn't work. And everybody who was anybody watched that debate in California, and it was actually aired around the country too, greatly at that time. And we didn't have the internet then much, but it was definitely aired on a lot of things. And we won. And I'm proud of the fact that I helped win it. Now, what they're doing right now, I just saw the guy who sponsored that bill. Now, these leftist communists are trying to remove it. They're trying to get rid of it, and they're going to make a new constitutional amendment. It was a constitutional amendment that had to be voted on. And a new constitutional amendment is saying that they're getting rid of the old one that said you can't have racial discrimination, and now they're going to have wording that programs, you know, for diversity, you know, and that really means racial preference for certain races, non-whites, are perfectly legal and proper. So the state of California is going to literally enforce massive racial discrimination. I must say something else, too. They still get around this right now in California a lot, the original bill, because what they'll say is they'll take out. In fact, they're demanding that test scores for a university are stopped, that you can't use test scores anymore, and you can't use grades, past grades, to determine whether a person's entered into college, you know, but you can use other factors, but you just can't use that, right? And then they just quietly discriminate. But now they're going to make it's going to be a law, basically, in California. You've got to have diversity, which means that you have to discriminate against any young white person, no matter what his income, no matter what obstacles he's overcome with, like, handicaps or difficulties or, you know, problems in his life or broken families or whatever issues they have. And there are many, many millions of white people in California that grow up, you know, as poor or poorer than half of the black people do in California.
Well, whites are leaving California in droves. I mean, they've had enough. They're losing population in California for the first time. And come to East Tennessee, hey.
So that bill, you know, was for public things, but that bill didn't even, 206, it didn't even address, the issue of this massive discrimination by every single one of the Fortune 500 companies. And to, it didn't even address that and the affirmative action contracting that exists all over the country with these companies, the private companies, right? Which is massive, a lot bigger than state, even though state is a big part of that too. Didn't even address that. So, I mean, this is the new reality of America, but we're called, you know, the vicious racists, you know? We got 4 minutes left. I want to get your take on this, and there are certain elements of the right or the alt-right that I think are making a big damn mistake. Some of them are, and I'm really worried about this, they're putting out the word. Richard Spencer's one of them. I'll indict the guy in many ways. I don't agree with him on everything, but he says he's voting for Biden, and Biden's much better and all this crap. And I just don't understand that at all, because the truth is, these Democrats, if they sweep the House and they sweep the Senate, if you don't vote, if you say, well, they're both just as bad, they're not just as bad. At least, you know, Trump actually came out against the race, critical race theory. If they sweep the House and the Senate and the presidency, my God, they will, by executive order or even just file the bill, they'll legalize and they'll make American citizens out of 20 million illegal aliens in the country right now. There'll be no white president elected after that. They will absolutely criminalize your politics and my politics, even though we're totally nonviolent in every way, always have been. I know you have always been that way. They're going to criminalize us as terrorists, even though we condemn any sort of terrorism. And they're going to completely be able to cleanse us, to scrub us, to censor us from the internet. And the internet is the reason why the Jews are so desperate to silence us all, because the reason why people are more aware on the race question, the reason why Trump got elected, many others, is because we could go on social media to a degree. We could do a YouTube video. We can't do that much anymore. We could do these live things. And the fact is, you know, if Biden is elected, and the and these Jewish Bolsheviks around them, this is not only going to mean maybe concentration camps for a lot of people, imprisonment for people, and letting the black criminals out of jail, which they already are saying they're going to do. It's also going to mean taking the internet like a light switch and cutting it off.
Good. From look, I have to say, our national alliance has nothing to do with the alt-right community. And we are racial separatists, and Richard Spencer, if he wants to vote for Biden, good for him. But I don't do social media myself. Internet, these youngsters coming up, they spend all their time on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, all this stuff. I have never been on any
Facebook
of them.
Facebook and Google, right?
Yeah, it's a shame that they live in a virtual world. And anyway,
well, here's the deal,
nationalvanguard.org. Let me put out our online magazine, nationalvanguard.org, and there's lots of articles about you on there, and you'll see we are holding the hard line, and
yeah, you've always defended me and recognized the importance of my work, and I so appreciate that. And I love your work, too, and I've always promoted your work, too. Let me just close by saying this to you, one thing, and I don't want people to get the impression that this is just about social media. The truth is they are already taking domain names from sites they don't like. This will become common. They are going to take away, if they get elected, I believe that they will come for your website. They will come for the – they've already come for the ability of us to even use credit cards. And the point is, we have to be able to use that. That's modern currency. That's like forbidding you to use coin, right, in years past.
Well, we've been deplatformed by all the credit cards.
Right.
And let me say, this Jew, Dan Shulman, who owns PayPal, he was interviewed in Wall Street Journal last year.
We're out of time. I'm sorry, Will. We're out of time.
Well, he admitted to SPLC, tells him who to blacklist.
Well, okay, yes. One final word. Listen, Will, what this is going to be is they're going to prevent people from having a website. They're going to prevent people from having an email. They're going to prevent people from expressing themselves at all, and they can use these bots. This is the biggest danger to free speech and human rights in the history of the world. You got to vote for Trump. You have no choice. Bye-bye now. Go to daviddukes.com and support our efforts and also support the National Alliance. Thanks, folks.
Let me break in to add that the leadership of the National Alliance believes and has believed for its entire existence that we can never vote our way out of our existential plight. We're working for an organizational and national and race-wide future that doesn't involve asking the media, or the ignorant majority, or the current criminals in Washington for permission to survive as a race. You have been listening to part two, the concluding part, of Fighting for What is Right, with National Alliance Chairman William White Williams being interviewed by Dr. David Duke on the Rents Radio Network. Thanks for being with us today, right here on American Dissident Voices.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the Alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine. A place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with a conservative, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us, are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker, nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. There's no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Send them, let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal after we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves. That they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people, and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.